This is RSVNB Update, episode 628, recorded Thursday, July 20th, 2017. Expand or die. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSVNB Update. This week, we're doing the Star Trek Online special of RSVNB Update, as promised, but we also have some major RuneScape news to discuss. But before we get into either of those, I'm going to introduce you to the panel here this week. This week, we got Trekkie, who you're back. Welcome back.
I bet nobody missed me whatsoever.
Oh, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. I get lots of mail saying we want Trekkie back.
Really?
Yeah, lots of people PM me on RS and say, what happened to Trekkie?
Name five.
I'm sorry, I can't do that for reasons of revealing their names, but I have had people do that. Also here is Earth, who moderator at RSVNB, High Counselor at Clan Quest, and I guess in general is the planet. And lots of people always wonder about what happened to you and want you back as well. So I guess it's fair to say I got two heavyweights with me here this week. Well, you know, heavy hitters.
A little better.
There you go.
Hello.
So, out of all of us, Shane Reed is the healthiest one of us all.
Yeah, that's probably true. It's probably true.
All right. So, first things first, a new update, or should I say, new announcement came from RuneScape. We're going to mobile. Shane, take it away.
You know, I just need to take a moment here and do a bit of a victory lap because, you know, there was a certain community online that said, oh, this is going to be RS4 and they're going to remove the tick rate and they're going to remove dynamic map loading tiles and it's going to be an entirely new client and that's what we're going to get here on Monday. But
an entirely new client?
Yeah, that's right.
They just released one?
Exactly, and that's why that made zero sense. Whatsoever. I mean, if you look at the technical side of the NXT client, the client they released last year, that client on its own is only being used a fraction of what it's capable of. Anything that JAX wants to do in the future can be done on the NXT framework. They just need to put Java to bed. So that's why that announcement or that theory, I guess, by those people made zero sense whatsoever. And you guys were there in Discord that one night when I just burst out laughing when that theory popped up, right?
No,
but go ahead.
Yeah. We were discussing this in the RSVNB Discord when it came up, and I had briefly heard of the news the day before. And oh my God, I had some people in Discord who were so insistent that this was what it was going to be. I just got to say, we were right. It wasn't RuneScape 4. Instead, it's RuneScape on mobile. So, anyways, RuneScape on mobile. Initial thoughts. Are you guys – is this a shock to you?
No.
Maybe on a small scale.
Why is that?
They've been talking about wanting to get onto mobile for a while, just can never figure out how to do it.
Okay.
And, so, no. Yeah.
You know, it's going to be for iOS and Android. We know that much. No Windows version.
It was a surprise, not me.
Yeah. Are you going to stick with that platform?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just wasn't sure if.
Until I am dragged kicking and screaming from it.
All right. Earth here is a Windows phone platform user and has been for a number of years. You guys will probably remember that from a podcast in the past, but in any case, we're forecast to get this in 2018.
Didn't I tell you at the end of an episode that
you
I
did.
Got one?
You did.
Yeah, you talked about how great it was too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So kudos for you.
Well, I mean, if I had to abandon iOS, I would go to Windows Phone.
You would never abandon Madden Apple, Shane.
Yeah, so see, he can make that promise.
Well, we'll see. You never know what might happen, but the old school version is supposed to ship in November or December because it's a simpler engine to port over. And we'll see closed betas this fall for both old school and RS3 on the mobile platform. So what Jagex did show us this week is they did do a bit of a pre-alpha gameplay teaser of the mobile client running on an Android device. Shows a very interesting kind of menu with your inventory and whatnot. Someone running around chopping some logs, and it looks, you know, exactly like the RuneScape that we all know. And it's all, it looks very tappable in terms of using your fingers to play the game, which, you know, if you think about it, that's something that is going to be the largest hurdle for Jagex here, is making the interface usable on such a small screen when we all have a decade plus experience using a keyboard and mouse, right? So before we get into the Q&A with this, do you guys have any hopes, or what do you guys think of this? You think it's going to be a success?
I think it'll be a success.
All right. Any particular reasoning behind that?
Because all games are just moving heavily to mobile lately, and this will allow a lot of the like older teens, early 20s who remember RS, they'll be like, I can get that on my phone now, and then they'll play it.
Yeah. And I mean, when you think about it, there's so much you can do in game, from, you know, fishing, woodcutting, even just checking ports, that you can just accomplish now on a little device.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That, compared to needing to log into a full desktop version of it. You know, one thing I think that's going to be really interesting for a lot of people is for people who have iPads or tablets in general, and they can pop RuneScape up on that screen, and then using the picture-in-picture feature, the split-screen feature, they can then have a YouTube or a Netflix app going in the side. And basically, you got the perfect way of playing RuneScape on the couch or in bed, when previously you would have had to have a bulky laptop with you, right? So I think that's going to show lots of promise there. They did a live stream this week about Q&A, and they had a straw poll in this. And one of the very common places in this chat poll that they did, where people said they were going to take RS on mobile, guess where it was? 44%.
Okay.
Take a guess.
Probably like 1%?
No. Take a guess as to where they were going to try and play RS3.
On the toilet.
There you go. You hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, yeah. Well, you know, shampoo bottles are, you know, two decades ago.
Yeah, but I don't know. And I mean, I have to assume that the vast majority of that was joking, because I personally don't do that, but I don't know if that's a very
common thing. Shane, you don't do a lot of things.
Okay. Oh, I miss doing these podcasts with you, Reed.
All right. Okay. Interface. I think the interface is going to be obviously tweaked to work with your thumbs. It's going to be more of a two-handed interface, I think, unless you're on a small device. So I think that would be the most logical way to go, and I think that makes sense. Movement-wise, what we can see in this gameplay alpha video is that a two-finger drag will be the ability to move your camera around. Tap will be a single click, and if you pinch to zoom, that'll zoom in the camera as we currently do in RS. So the core mechanics of the interface have moved over to mobile and have done so quite well, I think, with this. It's going to be really interesting to see where Jagex goes with this and what kind of feedback comes in for it. If you guys had to choose, what would be your preferred way of interacting with it on a mobile device?
What do you mean?
Like, say, for example, would you rather have a radial menu where if you tap on an NPC, you get a circular menu with all the options? Or would you rather have a swipe and drop down menu, kind of like we have in game with the single click mode? Yeah.
I think the second option would be best.
I would vote for a second option too, because if they get players to play this more on their phone, maybe they go back to their computer, you know, play it online. And if they do, then, well, it's easier to transition. Hey, how come I don't see the symbols anymore? Like, oh no, it's mm-hmm. more or less the same thing.
Right.
So, and it probably will make it easier with transition too.
And plus, we already have that single mouse button mode in game that could probably easily be adapted to this. I mean, who'd have ever thought that back in the day, the support for Mac mice and RuneScape would translate into tablet and mobile support? So,
who would have thought in 20 plus years? Let's see, not 20 plus years. What am I doing? To 2010, 17 years of RS?
Yeah,
give or
pretty
take?
Much.
Yeah, so almost 20. So in that, most people are still playing it.
Yeah, well, it's a testament to the community and the game engine and the game devs behind it as well. So
okay,
that's great. And you're probably wondering, how can you get in on the beta on this? Well, they do have a little survey that you can fill out on the RuneScape website. This will be linked in the show notes at update.rsbb.com. They want your character name, email address. Would you be interested in playing an early test version of it? And do you want to receive promo email? Then on the next page, they ask you what kind of device you have. So you should probably be honest about that one. And they said the first batch of testers will be determined by, do we have too many people testing for iPhone or not enough for Android, or maybe small screens, large screens, that kind of thing.
Maybe they'll get to Windows.
Well, that could happen in another way at some point.
There is an option
right?
there. And then there's an other, which is like, what?
Yeah, I put other there. Maybe I'll get an email. What in the world do you use?
Right.
I use the old-fashioned flip phones.
Yeah, they said as a joke they could put RuneScape Classic on an old Nokia like that.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Have you ever, just to kind of go on this whole tablet endeavor here, have you ever tried RuneScape on your Surface? Your Microsoft Surface.
Yes.
And how does it work for touchability?
All right. I mean, RS is a point-and-click game, so...
Well, there you go. So, I mean, maybe that's the Windows solution. Because weren't they talking about being able to run x86 apps on a Windows phone at some point?
I believe that was a theory, but I'm not sure how that's going.
Well, fingers crossed for you then, so you can take RuneScape wherever.
Oh, I agree. Yes.
All right, so there was also a Q&A about this week. Old school research started about a year ago, and full-scale production started roughly 4 months ago on how to complete this project. Another question was asked, why now? And, this is exactly what you guys said. They want to keep RuneScape accessible to the current player base, and also people who might not have the time to play on a desktop, they can just do quick little things on their phone. Like you said, all the games nowadays are practically mobile, right? So that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Data use is going to be similar to existing RuneScape accounts. Old school will not need so much at all, because old school is designed to work on a dial-up connection. And RS3 data use is also relatively light unless you're loading models or a new game update, which they said they will be mindful of data limits and whatnot when they are updating the game.
Well, you can always set it to update only through Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and of course, that'll be an option for people as well. They said it's going to be, respect all the standard mobile conventions and whatnot like that.
But what I'm kind of wondering, how with free-to-play, they have banner ads on the client, on the website, and clients and whatnot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So think about, for free-to-play, all the ads that could potentially be popping out, how they would pop up. That would be interesting. Do they end up having, ads pop up when you first load in, or, when you go through a new area? Or, they had to make some kind of revenue, and Or maybe like, oh, hey, watch this ad to get 2GP. Maybe they'll do like the mobile version of it. Watch these ads to get full iron suit. Watch this ad to get full bronze. Watch this ad. You know, they need, they, you know, they'll add in advertisement. How yeah. they would do it would be interesting.
And, you know, both iOS and Android games do have the ability through their dev systems to run adverts inside of a game. So it's not inconceivable that something like that could happen. So
I feel like they I don't know.
You feel like
they, I don't know what Jagex is going to do.
All right.
Well, you know what they're really doing, Shane?
What's that?
They're following the 45th rule of acquisition, expand
or die.
Yeah, and so, I mean,
there you go, Shane. I did the Star Trek thingy for you for the podcast first.
Thank you. We have had a real shortage of those.
Well, that's your damn fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, just one more quick thing on the ads. I think another thing that can set RuneScape apart on mobile and can really differentiate it from a lot of the mobile games out there is that the microtransactions that exist in-game are not nearly as pervasive as some of the microtransactions that exist in other mobile games.
Oh, God, yes. So RF has done very well, where most of the stuff that they sell are very much either the bonds, which you can actually, if you grind enough to pay for it in through the game, or mostly are all cosmetic, except for the bank, extra bank thing. But you and I were lucky that we got it for free because
yeah.
But yeah, most of it is mostly cosmetic. Almost everything is cosmetic that you can buy, which I'm perfectly fine with.
Exactly.
And we can go later on with another game where it's very much pay to win. So, but we'll get there when we get there.
Yes. A couple of other things here from this Q&A. They will be doing UI scaling based on the resolution of your device, so that if you have a Retina-based tablet, it'll bring the UI up to a reasonable size, so it's not very tiny, and the text is not very tiny as well. And the biggest thing that came out of this is that after this is finished and has been launched, this UI scaling will be brought to the desktop client, which is something I have been wanting for a very, very long time. Because if you play RuneScape on a very large display, it's very hard to read the text. I have a 27-inch iMac, and sometimes I need to squint to read the text because it's so small. So as soon as they can bring this UI scaling to the desktop client, that'll be a huge benefit for everyone. Okay. We also got no offline play. That was a major question here.
Yeah, wouldn't be able to play offline anyway.
Yeah, because of course
doesn't make sense.
It's an online game.
Yeah.
Support for Touch ID and push notifications are something that could come later on, so you could have using your fingerprint as a kind of an authenticator to ensure that only you can log into your account.
Oh, that would be great for the bank pin thing.
There you go. There you go. They also said push notifications will come for grand exchange offers and maybe for things like when your farming crops are done. So if it's time to go to farming ports, another good one. So, lots of definite options here. Also, old school RuneScape will have their beta start with a few thousand players, and the beta will last as long as it needs to last, and the beta will take place on the live game. They're not going to have a separate server for it or copying accounts over.
On a live game.
Yeah. This also... go ahead.
You remember all the betas that they have done in the past and how completely...
like EOC?
Useless it became. Yeah, a little bit of EOC, but you remember when they were transitioning from RS1 to RS2, and now it's called RS in old school and all that, or RS Classic.
I remember that.
And, you know, I remember we were all in the beta. It was cool. We literally tried a whole bunch of things on. And EOC came out, people were saying they hate it, it sucks. It's like, okay. And we tried the new client thing that popped up for the high def thing for Chrome.
HTML5.
Yeah, and that kind of didn't that basically get destroyed right
off
the
bat? Yeah, it
became
NXT.
Yeah, so I'm a little worried with
with the betas, they'll make it live so that at least whatever you do there will happen in game. But
there's no incentive to play otherwise, nor should there
very
be.
Very true. Mm-hmm. And you hit the key point there, is that they want people who are legitimately playing and legitimately testing this to be providing feedback. Because if you have nothing at stake, you're not going to give it the same kind of stress test that you need. And, mm-hmm. You hit the nail on the head also with the EOC stuff. Because remember how we got free tier 90 weapons for the EOC beta?
So. Yeah, I mean, you can't really compare the two because you can't put an EOC test into the live game, right?
Right. And that's why
you can with this.
Right, because it's just a new client.
Mm-hmm.
No. And this led into the natural discussion, since you can do VR on some phones, is there ever going to be a VR version of RuneScape? And the answer is no, the game would need to be completely rebuilt for that. So,
besides, all you would see are pixels and pointy noses.
Maybe.
Well, actually, that's my character. I don't think my character has a pointy nose. He's not Pinocchio. You probably see all the gray hair I have on it.
Yeah, at least they added eyes to the RuneScape game a number of updates.
What are you trying to say, man?
Nothing at all.
What are you trying to say?
Nothing at all.
Okay, then.
This was also asked, will this affect update frequency? And the answer was no. The updates that the mobile game gets are going to be the same as the desktop game, which is a huge issue for some mobile games out there because, they ship entirely different version numbers. Whereas with this, it's going to just download like it does on your computer. So it's very nice. And this led to the announcement that the RuneScape Companion app is being decommissioned later this year because there will be no point for it, and it's just really old, and there's no point in updating it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I didn't bother using that one.
Yeah, it was kind of clunky, I found.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay, I didn't bother with it.
Yeah.
So
there was one more question that was asked in this Q&A. How can RS Mobile be successful? And their answer was, take part in the beta and share what you're doing on your phone. Don't minimize it if someone comes to see you, and don't pretend that it's something you don't want them to see. And the exact word was, don't say it's porn.
Beep. Which is concerning to me.
Why?
Because, is that... Do they think that people would rather say that they are watching porn instead of playing cards?
Yeah, you never know.
I know which one I'd rather say I was doing.
What, look at the Orion slave girls?
No, I'd rather say I was playing RS.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
But, ultimately, huge announcement this week, and I think... if this is pulled off correctly, it has the potential to be as big, or if not bigger, than the MiniClip deal in 2005 was. And the reason for that is because you get free exposure on the iOS App Store and the Google Play App Store. And this is like in 2005, Jagex put a link to their RuneScape game. They paid for a link on the MiniClip.com website, and this drove a huge amount of new players to the game.
Really did.
Yeah. So,
man, MiniClip, Shane, that's going back old school.
I know it is.
I still remember when it was on MiniClip, people were like going to Jagex and like, oh my god, they have your game on a new website. Oh, no, is it safe? I don't know. I was like, no, yeah, we licensed it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's why this is going to be so big, because if you can get in the top 10 or top 20 on the new games in the App Store, just imagine the kind of exposure you get. So
mm-hmm.
It's going to be really great. So,
okay.
All right. Anything else on mobile, or shall we move on to the little update that came this week?
Let me see. I think we have a question on that one later.
Yeah,
we?
So we can probably come back to it.
Yeah, so I'll answer that later on.
Okie dokie. So this week we got the Build the Beach event where you can bring sand to Reyna in the Lumbridge Crater. And you get the sand basically while you're skilling around RuneScape. And if you manage to complete the event by bringing her 15,000 sand, you can get a ring of sand, which lets you turn into a pile of sand. You can also get the sand cave. Yeah, me too. I don't like it. It gets everywhere. It's annoying. There's also
was that Shane? Was that a Star Wars reference?
I don't believe so.
Oh, Reed.
Yes, yes, it was. Yes, it was, Shane.
Oh.
Yes, very much.
I told Shane that earlier, and he's repeating it.
Oh, so I just worked it into my consciousness then, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Not only you got played. Not only that, Shane, you said something that literally there's like a million YouTube videos on the conspiracy theories and Star Wars theory on that quote.
All right. Good to know. Good to know.
All right.
You can get 500 free sand a day by carting sand across the Lumbridge crater, except you need
to sound free.
It's not, because you need to avoid these huge cyclones that are going to attempt to suck you up and remove your sand. So.
It's not free.
Oh, Shane, question.
Yeah.
You remember Bert?
Yeah, the sand guy in Yanil, right?
So, you need sand. I have unlimited sand. Why don't we start a chain and we just keep getting buckets all the way down to Lumbridge? Everyone gets infinite sand. You get sand. Pocket sand. Fan sand. Sand!
Yeah.
You have sand in your diaper, too.
What?
What?
Sand in your diaper?
Yeah.
All right. I'm not sure exactly where you're going with that, but we'll just leave that there. So 500 sand a day. You have until July 31st to do this. It's just like all the other various community events. If you're not interested in it, just convert all the sand you get into prismatic lamps, stars, and mystery boxes. That's probably what I'll be doing, because, I mean, I'm not too fussed on the ring. So, also this week, the Ninja Team has brought in the Tier 92 dies for Blood, Shadow, and Baros, and Third Age dies. So if you have one of those Tier 92 weapons that comes from Telos, you can dye them up with these colors. And I can only imagine how much these are going to go for in the Clue Scrolls. So might be a good time to do some Clue Scrolls, I think. I'm going to do that later.
I actually kept three in my bank literally for years, and finally someone talked me into finally completing them.
Oh, yeah. Now, of course, is the good time to do that.
Well, I did it, and because basically the idea, I believe it was, once you whatever clue you get, it's already generated what reward you get, too. But it worked out for me because I ended up getting Ranger boots, and I got like easy 5 mil off of it.
There you go.
Ooh.
There you go. And not to mention all the treasure trail items are worth a lot nowadays because of the disassembling required for the alchemical onyx ring or stone.
Ah, yes. It's going to take me decades to get that.
Yeah, 107 invention as well. But
it's not too far off if you, I mean, it's actually quite, well, I think that's another story for another day.
All right, maybe you can do that in the final segment. Okay, so some patch notes for the week. As always, just feel free to stop me if there's any of these you want to discuss or if there's any that you want to add on to. But starting off here, players can now use the Wilderness Artifact to enter the Kingback Black Dragon Lair from within the Lava Maze to start a bossing instance. Of course, this is the bossing interface that came out a number of years ago that enables you to do practice mode and whatnot or have your own instance. This change also means that Iron Man accounts can now complete the achievement, I'm the King of the Wild. I feel like that's a quote from somewhere.
Well, probably something, well, in the King of the Jungle.
Is that Lion King?
No.
Tarzan.
Oh, okay.
I'm King of the Jungle or something like that.
Okay.
Anyway.
Warning message is now displayed when going below 100 ammo in a Tyrannan quiver. Players also receive a warning message if a player is less than 500 runes in a rune pouch or less than 100 ammo in a Tyrannan quiver when starting a bossing instance. Of course, the rune pouches are the items that come from Bounty Hunter. You can purchase with bounty reward points. Specific quick prayer presets can now be assigned to a direct left click option or a last used left click option through the preset settings cog in the quick interface menu. Boy, that's a mouthful of things to find, isn't it? So. Whew. It's also now possible to rename quick prayer presets after they have been created. You previously couldn't do this last week when the update came out. Clue Scroll rewards will now move to a player's bank if they have a full backpack. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's a good quality of life change.
Yeah, because previously, I don't know if it would have fell on the floor or what, but...
Well, technically, it was always on the floor, wasn't it? Or did it make it go into inventory now?
I don't know. I mean, I've never had done a clue scroll with a full inventory, so I don't know if they went to the floor.
Well, even so, don't you, when you get one, isn't just on the ground and then you got to pick it up anyway?
Probably.
Yeah. So it just dropped it on the floor.
All right.
Oh, don't forget, you can get it from your house, too. I forgot all about
that. The house?
Yeah, aquarium.
Oh yes, of course. Right.
Your daily clue scroll.
Weekly. Yeah, I know. How you feel about the aquarium. I still feel that way.
Why? You get to swim with the fishes, just like Data did.
That should have been the greenhouse. The click zone has been increased on the fishing spots at the Priftina's waterfall. All right. Crystal tool siphons and equipment siphons are now stackable. Yay. And a level-up message has been added for when players reach the level required to unlock the invention skill. So, Yeah, and these are good ones this week, and commend JX for doing a lot of these, especially the clue scroll one and the siphon stacking one. So that's good. You can make those pretty easily now. All right. Anything else RuneScape related before we move on to the Stowe section?
Not really.
If you have fun with RS, keep playing.
Well, of course. That's why we're all here, I assume. Well, some of us. Mm-hmm. Well, all of us. I think so, at least. I mean, I've seen you guys
some
all...
Some of all three of us.
Right. I know I've seen the both of you all on it at some point over the last month, so... All right, Star Trek Online. So this is a game that we all play, and it's been a long time since we decided that we were going to do a special about this. And I think it's just something that we wanted to just have a general chat about and get on the record and kind of share a bit about it, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So what we're going to do here is we're going to give you guys a brief rundown of how this game works. And why you might want to pick up this game, and if you pick up this game, what you might want to expect. So, let us begin. So, a little bit of a history and background of Star Trek Online. So, the first hint of the Star Trek-based MMO came in 2006 when the game company Perpetual Entertainment revealed they were working on a Star Trek MMO, later to be called Star Trek Online. Trekkie, I'm not sure if you remember us chatting back then. Do you remember when this was first announced?
I think it was like 07.
Yeah, 06, 07, something like that. And we got lots of information about it. Perpetual worked on it for about 2 years, and then Perpetual Entertainment unfortunately shut down. And when they shut down, the rights and assets were transferred to Cryptic Studios in 2008. And at the Star Trek Las Vegas convention in August 2008, Cryptic said they're working on the game and it would be available in less than 3 years. But they really got their act together and got this game out very quickly, so much so that we had a beta of the game in October 2009 and a public launch in February of 2010. I have had the game since February 2010, but only played it for about 6 months or so. That's the initial amount of membership that I got at the time. Initially, yeah. The game required a subscription fee of $15 a month or a $299 one-time lifetime subscription. And in January of 2012, this is when things really picked up for like all of us here. The game moved to a free-to-play model and continues to be free-to-play today. Everything in-game can be obtained without spending real money, but it will take you some good time to do that if you opt to go
that path. I think that's an understatement, but
we'll get to that later on. Yeah, it is. It is for Stowe, but we'll get to that. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking Star Trek, when is this set? Well, the quick answer of this is it's set roughly 30 years after the events of Star Trek Nemesis, the last movie with Picard, in the year 2410. Your character basically puts together a mystery of what's going on in the galaxy. The Borg are aggressive again. The Klingons are no longer friendly. And some very interesting things have been happening in all the major powers of the Quadrant. So that is how Star Trek Online picks up. And you play through this, and you try and figure out what's happening, and you immerse yourself in this universe. So, any of you guys want to jump in right now before we go into exactly the mechanics of the game?
As I remember, when you were more excited about this than I ever was. And primarily for me, it was same deal as why I don't play WoW. They asked you to buy the game at the time. And pay a monthly fee.
Right.
And I hated that idea. So I said, pick one, not both.
And so free to play.
That was me.
And free to play, fix that.
Mm. Yeah.
No. And I think you, Earth, I'm the one who got you into this, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And it has proved to be a very interesting thing for the three of us to do. And you'll see why in just a little bit. So the game has four factions, Federation, Klingon, Romulan, and 23rd Century. These are much like factions that you would find on, or I guess they would be called allegiances on World of Warcraft, if I know my World of Warcraft terms correctly. But all four of them have unique starships, equipment, and abilities. The Federation and Klingons are full factions. The Romulan and 23rd Century Starfleet factions join a main faction at level 10. The Romulan one has a choice to join either the Federation or the Klingons. So there's lots of choice in that. I think we mainly focus on the Fed side, though. I haven't done the Klingon storyline. I think you guys have, yes?
Well, I have a Klingon character. I'm still waiting for you to buff him up, but me.
Right.
Yeah, I did.
We got to get to that. Yeah. And we'll get to storyline in just a moment. And among these factions, there are classes. Anyone in these factions can choose one of the three classes in the game: tactical, engineering, or science. Tactical focuses on raw damage and increasing damage you can do. Engineering focuses on survivability in space, while on the ground focus on building devices like bombs and mines and sabotaging enemies. Meanwhile, science can effectively be called space wizardry, and on the ground they can continue their space magic or they can become good healers. What would you guys say is your favorite faction of the three? Or favorite class,
23rd Century Fed. Oh. Favorite class?
Yeah, favorite class.
I still like my Psy. He done good to me.
And the reason you're having such trouble deciding is because all of them are very unique and they all accomplish something very differently, don't they?
Yeah, because, I mean, I have my Tack who destroys everything just by shooting
it. Just by looking at him.
Yeah, I have my Engineer who just overwhelms them with power. And then I have my Psy who kills them with space magic.
Yeah,
space magic.
And I mean, I have attack using a lot of science abilities too. So like there's a lot of overlap too.
Right. And that's something else with this is that you can choose to be a tactical officer in this game, but you could play like a science character as well if you so choose to. And you would just have a very interesting hybrid kind of build set up. So if you like variety, that is definitely something you can accomplish in this game. More on that later. Now, here's something I think that lots of people will overlook when they look at Star Trek Online, is that there's essentially two games in one, in that there's a space game and a ground game. And they're both very, very unique, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is space, Trekkie.
Space is easier because then I just say follow you, and you like you just blow everything up, and I just clean up.
All right,
you do the same thing on ground, Trekkie, except it's me instead of Shane.
I have no issues with being a follower in this game. Oh, you guys, you know, you guys say Trekkie, you go here. All right, blow this thing up, blow it. Okay, boom, it did. Next, okay. And, I have no issues doing that.
And the thing to underscore here is that, Reed, you prefer ground and I prefer space. And
absolutely.
We've been able to accomplish lots of amazing things with this and teach each other a lot about how these work. So if you pick this up, you're essentially getting two games in one. I'll talk about a bit about space for a moment here. Space in space, as you basically progress, you're given a new ship to command, and these ships fit into the previously mentioned classes of science, engineering, and tactical, and there's going to be some overlap between them. In general, you have cruisers, which have high hit points and lots of weapon ports, and engineering-based seating, if you like the engineering playstyle. Escorts focus on forward firepower and maneuverability with tactical seating, while science ships have the least weapons but make up for it with strong shields and the ability to perform their space magic. So, as you can see here, you can be a tactical character, but you could very well fly a science ship, or you could be a science character but fly a tactical ship if you so wanted to. And there's also a third or fourth kind of ship that exists in-game, and carriers. And they can be focused around any of the aforementioned classes, and their primary goal is to launch smaller ships that do a decent amount of damage for you. I know, Earth, you're...
They do a lot of damage. Yeah,
you're a very big fan of carriers, aren't you?
Yes.
And
especially with the faucet ship.
We don't have that
The
one.
What?
The faucet.
The one that looks like a faucet. Yeah, but you all know which one I'm talking about. I'm keeping a G, Shane, just for you.
Thank you.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, the cat carrier. One.
I see.
Yeah. And also worth note, some of the largest ships in game are carriers. So if you want a ship that is going to take your entire screen up and be very durable, you might look at playing a carrier, which we have some of those kicking around as well.
And they are literally, as Shane would put it, a whale.
Yes, they are. So
because it takes you forever to maneuver around, like, so it's usually you're like, you just stand there and you just fire everything and then like hope everything dies, and then because you ain't getting out once you get in. No. You're so slow.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about customization. There's lots of customization in this game for what you can do in terms of how the ships look, but also how they can perform. And we could spend hours talking about this, couldn't we? How the ships look and how they perform, right?
And have.
Yeah, we have. And I think that's beyond the scope of this podcast, unfortunately. But suffice to say, we have thrown some very interesting things together. What would you guys say is the most interesting thing we've thrown together out of in your mind?
For me, the torpedo thing. You can explain it better than I can because you built
the one with
the original torpedo one and the one on Jenna right now.
Okay.
I will let you explain them better.
So the first one here that Earth is talking about, we built a ship designed to fire as many torpedoes as we can in the least amount of time. So what
these
we
are big glowing green torpedoes.
Right. So we would end up with a screen. I got to say there had to be at least 20 plus torpedoes on the screen at one time, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So that is one thing we did. And
Shane would fill the screen with balls, flowing, killing green balls.
Of energy.
Just like Zenyatta.
There you go. And the other one that we're experimenting with right now, and Earth here is fine-tuning, is a massive control-focused ship that basically generates a 20-kilometer-wide gravity well that sucks everything in within that area,
AOE.
You should
ability.
Explain the 20-kilometer thing. Okay. Also,
so basically, what this means is that we choose a certain point in the map where we are. So let's just say we choose a certain enemy ship. We fire the gravity well on that target. Then within 10 or 12 kilometers radius in the game from that side, everything will just get brought in towards it.
No. What I meant is, why is it significant that it's 20 kilometers? What makes that a big deal?
Oh, okay.
You're in space. That's not a long distance.
Right. Okay. So what we're looking at in regards to as to why we like this is because anything within that area will be damaged significantly by that. And the damage increases as it gets closer to the center. So
okay. So the biggest point of this is 20 kilometers is significant because the farthest distance that you are normally able to attack someone is 10 kilometers away.
That's
so you're
point.
Essentially, hold on, let me do math here.
Five math.
Let's see. One moment.
All right.
Let's see. So
you're probably trying to figure out how far you can project your range, right?
He's doing so.
Basically, that increases the factor that you can do damage by 4 because you have a circle around you with a radius of 10. And then otherwise you'd have a circle of 20, right?
Right.
That makes sense?
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's what, because someone who's not familiar with the game, which most of our listeners won't be, aren't familiar with like the whole 10-kilometer thing and why it's such a big deal that you can hit something 20 away.
Yes. Oh, thank you for
that's
explaining.
That's what I'm trying to get you to explain.
Yeah, and I think you just did a perfect job of explaining it with the whole 10 kilometers out from your ship being the maximum, and then that's why extending it out to 20 is so big. So I think you did a perfect job explaining that.
And it pulls all of them in to that point.
Yeah, basically what this means is once they pull everything to that point, we unleash hell and everything in it blows up.
Yeah.
And the best part is when one ship blows up, it hurts every other ship in the immediate area. So you blow one ship, it's a cascading effect. Everything dies.
Yeah. Yep.
It's very pretty. Unless you have a really bad computer, then it really sucks.
Yeah.
That's like I used to have.
Yeah, and that's another core distinction that we'll make here is that if you're just barely playing RuneScape and you have a weaker computer, you will want a somewhat stronger computer if you want to try Star Trek Online out, I think. And internet connection as well should be pretty good because it's not very kind to people who have bad internet. So,
well, what do you mean by bad internet?
High pings, an unstable connection, really. So,
pretty much the same thing you would for any other online game.
Yeah, except for RuneScape because that requires such little bandwidth.
Wow.
So, the game is also at a point, I think, where any ship that you saw on TV can be found in the game at some point or can be flown by you, which is something I know a lot of people like. Just this past week, they brought out a few of the ships that were in Star Trek Insurrection, one of the movies. So that's how obscure they get. And there's also lots of ships designed by the game devs. So it's a good variety here as well. So, all right, ground combat. I know you like your ground combat a lot. So let's just spend a few moments talking about that, shall we?
Okay.
So overall, what would you say is the main difference between ground and space, aside from the distances we operate?
Well, so in space, you can be a tactical officer and fly a science ship and use lots of science abilities, right? In ground, there's not so much overlap. Each class has distinct abilities, which do drastically different things. Like, science has space ground magic. Like, you can apply radiation to a group of foes. You can freeze them all. You can set them on fire. With engineering, you have fabrications, so you can set up like turrets and, my favorite, mortars, and they just rain down on the enemies
at
from
a very long distance. Very long,
yeah,
range, right.
And do lots and lots of damage. You can set up mines.
Oh, those are fun.
And then tactical, while it does high damage, doesn't have
great survivability sometimes.
No, it does. It tactical's mostly based upon self and team buffs. It doesn't have anything nearly as much as science and engineering do, but it's still
well, fun to play. You just want to shoot stuff.
Yeah. And that one, my TAC is actually the highest, my highest damage output character currently. So just because you can't build all of these things or do, you know, space ground magic, doesn't mean you can't do damage. They're all fantastic, and I would say roughly equal. But
which is a bit different than in space, because in space, engineers kind of fall behind a bit, and we need to work to make them special. So
yeah,
and I think that's also what makes ground really interesting, is that, like you said, it's all equal. And
also the neat thing about ground is so I don't think Shane went into this, but in space there are different types of weapons. Some of them have, they can go from a 45 degree firing arc, which means if you're not facing directly at the enemy, they can't fire and they can't shoot the enemy. And then you have turrets, which are 360. You have beams, which are, what, 240, 270? 250. 250, right there. So you have that limitation. So say that you have also the different ships, like they can go different speeds and they turn at different rates. So like you can't get a ship that turns very slowly to use something like cannons with a 45 degree firing arc very effectively. The difference between that and ground is you can do pretty much anything on ground and it will work.
So I assume by anything you mean any kind of weapon, right?
Any kind of weapon, any kind of ability. I mean, there's nothing.
And you know,
I would go as far as calling that build with the slow turning ship and the cannons wrong. Is that a fair statement?
Yes,
Shane?
Definitely.
There's, you can't do anything wrong on the ground. You can have someone who builds mortars and just rains down on the enemy
above and the back.
Or you can run in with a melee weapon and just chop them.
We need to get Trekkie one of those for either his Klingon or his Romulan for ground.
Yeah, and I would say that those builds are just as fun. That's what makes ground fun for me, is that you can get anything to work.
And you know, in some regards, also with that, ground is much more customizable than space.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even though there's not as many ground powers, and you know, it's not as overpowered, let's say, you can still pull something off that's remarkably effective. It's effectively like a ground combat simulator, right? Because you can just do whatever you want there. At least that's what I would call it.
And I mean, of course, there are like optimal, like selections of abilities, but I mean that goes with everything.
Yeah, and you can also, you know, just go average and have a bit of everything on the ground and be successful too.
Yeah, I mean you can still have fun.
Right,
is the point.
Another good thing I think we should mention about ground is that there's two different ground modes. You can have a first-person shooter mode, Or you can play it like a traditional MMO where you have to press all the buttons individually. I personally am a fan of the first-person shooter mode. I don't know about you guys.
No.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
And see, that's where we're different. I prefer the first-person shooter. And that effectively makes it more like, I don't know what game I would describe it like. What would you guys describe first-person shooter ground
Mass
stuff?
Effect.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it, Trekkie.
Welcome.
Whereas I'm guessing that the non-first-person shooter mode would be more like WoW, right?
I mean, you just get a target and then you're basically casting an ability at it, so yeah.
All right. And, you know, this is an example of how the game has progressed, because when this came out, the first-person shooter mode wasn't available in the game. So this is something that they added based on player feedback, much like RuneScape does with many of their updates. So all in all, if you want to do something in this game, it's going to be possible, I think. You know, if we ever start playing with a new person, we'll say, what do you want to do in this game? And as long as they use a coherent language, we can make that happen.
Use a coherent language? Wow, Shane.
Well, I mean, like, as long as they say what they want to do in English, we can make it happen.
Wow, Shane.
I don't speak any other languages. Do you?
Yes.
Well, perhaps that's a wrong question to ask you.
God, Shane. You really got to ask me that? You make fun of me for that every single night.
I don't know why I asked you that.
You're doing great.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to mention on the ground, Earth, before we move on?
Running in with a sword is a lot of fun.
Yes, it is. I would agree.
All right.
Because you just literally go whole Leroy and then like, come on, Shane, let's do this. Like, wait, bruh, we're shooting. No, you're shooting. I'm chopping.
So what would you say is your favorite ground build then before we cap off the ground section? What's the favorite thing you've done on the ground?
That's difficult.
That's because there's so much good stuff on the ground.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, just my primary builds for each different career on science. I do something. There's in addition to what did I call them? Careers?
Yeah, careers.
What are we calling
or
those?
Classes.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
In addition to classes, there are specializations that are shared, like anyone can get them. And those would be what? Temporal. I'm thinking ground and space ones. So temporal,
intel,
commando, intel. And those also grant additional abilities. And one of my favorites is from the temporal one. It's called Paradox Bomb. What it does is it takes all of the enemies in an area and pulls them into one center area. So I like to use that on my Psy. And what I do is I use that, and then I use a bunch of area of effect abilities on them. Like I pull them all in, and then I use one that freezes and heavily damages them. Then I use one that does radiation, and I think I have another one that freezes them, and yeah, they all die.
Yeah,
very fast.
And that's what makes it so fun, is that we have all these different things, but they're all equally effective. And I think that's a good sign of game balance, especially on the ground. We've made good strides in the past few months to balance out space, but I think ground is more balanced than space at this point. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah. And then engineers, I just have my mortar build and turrets and mines. That one's fairly standard, but I find it fun.
Yeah.
And then my tack, I have. My tack is actually interesting because I have a weapon that chains between enemies. It hits one and then jumps to another, and then one more. And I actually use a couple of abilities where I like fire a wrist rocket at them, and I can call in a coordinated bombing strike and it sends in a drone that just drops charges on them.
Shane can even...
It's fun.
And Shane can literally go and call down an orbital strike too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lots of fun stuff there. So, all right. So let's talk a bit about, I think, the player progression and how you progress, because we really haven't talked about that. We just talked about the core of the game, haven't we? So the game starts out, you start off at level 1. The max level is 60. And you can level up through this game by just doing the storyline at this point. And there is a boatload of stories that you can do. There's storylines focusing around the Klingons, the Romulans, the Cardassians, the Borg, Species 8472.
That's Cardassians, not Kardashians, FYI.
Oh, yes, of course.
For the listeners, not for you, Shane, we know.
I know. It's just a shame we have to mention that, you know?
Yeah.
I think you're just hating.
You can always call them by their real name.
Spoonheads.
Yes! Spoonheads!
But in addition to those, we've got ones on the Delta Quadrant, time travel, and that's just a few of the arcs that are in-game that have multiple missions or episodes in them, as the game call it. So you can do that, and that is your progression to level up from 1 to 60. You can just do the storyline, and you will get yourself to level 60 eventually. Yeah.
And you'll have to, you know, grind a little bit on some levels because they don't. Some of them don't give you just enough.
Hold on,
experience.
Didn't they reduce?
Yeah, they did.
The XP.
Yeah, they flattened
between
out the XP
50 and 60.
Yeah, so it's only one per 50 to 60 now. So they did fix that, and that was a huge mistake when that came out, when they increased the level cap, and they finally got that fixed. So It's a lot more manageable now than it was in the past. Beyond that, there's also a duty officer system, which is kind of a sub-game. You can think of that as player-owned ports. If you play RuneScape, you have your ship and you have the duty officers aboard your ship, and you can send them off on little missions that take anywhere from, what, an hour to 4 days, I think?
Yeah.
Now, there's that. Once
30
you...
minutes. There are some 30-minute missions too.
Yeah, so
mostly fix a broken bone.
Right. It's just like player-owned ports, and you get stuff from them. Later on in progression, there's also the Admiralty system, which is the same thing except for excess ships you might have. So there's lots of ways to progress your player through this. There's also reputation systems, which let you get very high-end gear for a good value once you reach level 50. And I think that's one of the overlooked aspects of this game, is that if you're just playing this game, you can get the top-end gear in this game from your fleet, which is effectively a clan, or the reputation system past level 50. I think we all agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's also, as you said earlier, the specializations, which allow you to further customize your character. So suffice to say, if you create a character, you're not just going to level it up to level 60 and be done. You're going to be spending a lot of time doing this in-game, and you're going to spend lots of time to customize your character and get it just the way you want it going through this. In regards to storylines, they all flow nicely to get together and feel like episodes of the TV series. I think, would you guys agree with that assessment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, every set of missions is basically like their own little mini series. So you can literally, if you don't need to know the shows, to watch shows, know the lore to follow what's going on.
Right. But so, if you do know the lore, and if you do know the background info, you will find lots of little things in here from various episodes thrown throughout the series. You and I were just talking about this last night. There's this one episode in Star Trek Online, one mission, where...
Multiple,
where, you know, it's exactly a throwback to this one episode of Enterprise. And it's only this one episode of Enterprise, and it provides an alternate perspective on that episode. And they do that a lot. So that's also a nice thing if you've seen them.
Yeah, there's a lot of Easter eggs if you follow the shows. A lot. So it makes it very interesting.
Yeah, it's fun. This game is also voice acted by the various characters that play them on TV. Voice actors have included Leonard Nimoy as Spock, Chase Masterson as Lita from Deep Space Nine, Denise Crosby, who was Tasha Yar and Sela on Next Generation, and Michael Dorn, who is, of course, Worf. Also, for their first expansion, they brought back Tim Russ, Garrett Wang, Robert Picardo, Jeri Ryan, and Ethan Phillips, who are, of course, the main cast from Star Trek Voyager, who all reprise their roles as Tuvok, Kim, the Doctor, Seven of Nine, and Neelix for that expansion. And there's many more voice actors in the game. who do you guys feel did the best voice acting that made it feel like you're watching an episode of the TV series?
Unknown.
Doctor.
The Doctor? Yeah.
Probably.
You can never go wrong with the Doctor.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with him as well. Either him or Neelix, I think.
Neelix was just annoying, and he had a heartbreak at the end of that episode.
No spoilers. No spoilers.
I didn't spoil anything. He had a heartbreak.
Okay. And I think one of the things that we value here from this game is that most of the episodes and missions here can be played with a team of up to five people that you know. So if you are playing with someone that you know, you can do practically almost every episode in-game with them. And we do that whenever we're leveling up a new character. You know, it's just a better way to play the game, and you get to have some fun with people you know. So
yeah, and what's semi-nice about it, too, is that if you have other friends who are way higher level than you, you have to match your level, and what will happen is everybody will dump down to your level too. So all level 50s become level 22s, whatever it is. So keep it kind of even playing field. But if you really, really want to farm, you grab all your high level friends and you just stay in the back, let them do all the destroying, and you get XP from it.
But that's no fun.
Yeah, that's not fun.
Yeah. Well, you basically would. You can shoot back. It's just when they shoot you, you die instantly.
Yeah, and this is what I like, is that it's not, you know, an MMORPG in the sense you're playing with a million other people online. Well, not that many, but you're playing it with people you know potentially, which makes it great. The storylines are also advanced frequently, anywhere from monthly to every 3 months or so, and the game itself is updated weekly, just like RuneScape is, with tweaks and fixes to make the gameplay experience better. And one thing that, you know, you might talk to someone who played Star Trek Online back in 2012 and maybe they're considering coming back to the game is that over time the production quality on the missions has increased greatly. And, you know, ultimately, I think this is something that the three of us has really felt, is that over the last year this has encouraged us to take out lifetime subscriptions for the game. Just because
we recently bought one. But, like, I went back and played. I recently made a Klingon character, and I went through and played all of that. And those are the oldest missions in the game that haven't been revisited yet. And they were still very high quality. They're actually some of my favorite.
And there you go.
Because you get to go to Stobokor,
which is, of course, the really Klingon afterlife. So.
Yeah,
and you know, it. I think, would we all agree that the meat of this game, when you're leveling up, is in the storyline?
Oh yes, absolutely.
How
if you love the story,
tight they are,
and this is definitely a game that you will like.
Yes, most definitely. And speaking of that, what's our favorite missions? I'll ask you guys first.
I don't know. Shoot. I don't have one.
All right.
What's my favorite mission?
Yeah, your favorite mission.
Favorite series of missions, definitely the Nimbus arc.
Oh, okay.
Which is where you're able to go. It's only because I can play it with friends. And when you're on the ground, usually, if you're doing a mission, usually you get a team of four bridge officers to accompany you. And Nimbus, all of those missions are like sort of open. So if you have a group of five friends, you can all go down there individually with your away team. So you have a group of 25.
Oh yes, those were always
friendly
fun.
Characters, all just mowing down everything. It's so much fun.
And you can actually have more because what will happen, there are other people there, and they get all like, yeah, join our party. We're doing that mission too. Cool. You literally can have a giant army, and it's like army running around. And people are like, you know, the enemies are still spawning the same number of people. So they're like, five. I'm like, we're going to kill you. I got like 50 guys right behind me. You really think?
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. I forgot that you can do that in that series.
Yeah, I'll go with that. It was always fun to read that. Don't group up. Everybody bring your own officers and you get like an army of 50.
I mean, that's definitely not the best story-wise. That one would probably have to go to the Iconian arc.
Yes, definitely. The Iconian arc starts very early in the game.
But as far as actual gameplay, that one's definitely my favorite.
Yeah. And see, this is something that Star Trek Online does. You said the Iconian arc, and the Iconians were mentioned in a grand total of 2 episodes, once in Deep Space Nine and once in Next Generation, and yet they're made into an entire storyline in the game. So that was really nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite mission and favorite mission arc is the 2800 series, which was a revisit to Deep Space Nine of the ships that appeared, or rather disappeared, at the beginning of Season 6 of Deep Space Nine. You got to figure out what happens to them. And I won't give anything away, but there's this one mission. It's just absolutely fun and hilarious because you get to walk on the outside of Deep Space Nine. And then after that, once you make your way inside, you get to blow some Jem'Hadar out of the window. So much fun. So much fun. So that's my favorite. Did you guys know I was going to pick that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, I had no idea you would pick the mission that you talk about every time we play Stone.
You know, a couple weeks ago, I ran that mission 6 times and over the span of 3 days.
Yeah, you should tell people why.
Oh, I guess I should say that. It's not just because I like it so much. It's because I needed the mission rewards from that mission. And that's another aspect of it, is that each time you do a storyline, you get a reward. And if you like the rewards, you can get multiple of them by rerunning the mission. So that's what I was doing with that. So this is how you progress your character. And you might say, okay, so I progress my character. What happens when I reach the end? Well, when you reach the end, there's 2 notable end games to this game, to Star Trek Online. The first one is the elite content that really requires a coordinated team to play. It happens on both ground and space. I like the ground stuff and the space stuff. And, you know, this is something that the 3 of us do with our friends, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the elite content includes anything, you know, from killing Borg to ferrying people back and forth between Deep Space Nine and the Mirror Universe version of Deep Space Nine. What would you say, both of you guys, is your favorite end game elite content to play?
Fighting the Borg with the sword.
That's
so much fun. Just go in and just chop everything down. Especially if you grab that kung fu kick.
The elite ground cues, probably. I don't know which my favorite is.
Brotherhood of the Sword?
No.
No. Bug Hunt?
Probably Bug Hunt, yeah. But Minor Instabilities is really fun, too.
I haven't done that one yet.
It's really good.
We should do that at some point. So, but yeah. Lots of elite content in ground and space, and you can use that to advance reputation systems and get some pretty interesting drops along the way as well. So, and there's a whole community around maximizing for, you know, ground or space elite content, and we don't push too hard on that, but we do kind of take part in that a little bit. And the other end game, the unofficial end game of the game, is called "quote unquote" Space Barbie. So, what exactly is that about?
Earth. It's just in-depth character customization from appearance to just what they're wearing. You do have a screenshot of like the character customization menu.
I do not have a screenshot of that, but I can find one.
You should put one in the notes because it's just the sheer amount of customization that you can do in your character is amazing.
Yeah, you sent a screenshot of one last week that just looked absolutely absurd. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, I mean, if you just go into the Discord and scroll up, you can probably see. Something I like to do is post images of strange-looking characters in the RSBNB Discord channel, which you can find a link to at...
on the RSBNB forums at the bottom of it.
Yes.
So, let me see if I can find one here. I'm just visiting.
I'm scrolling up.
Let's see.
Where should I send this to?
Just send it on Skype.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I would.
Another great thing about this, while we're just on the topic of this, is that this customization also extends out to your ships as well. So if you have a certain ship that you like, but you might want to throw something else on it or some other variant of it, you can do that. Though not all of them are inherently customizable. I'm still scrolling.
Yeah. I mean, most of the ones I send are people who have done very poor jobs with theirs. Shane, if you look at the pins, you can grab one of mine, though. Like,
oh,
that's
a good
Christmas.
That's a good idea. Let me pull that up. Pins. Let's see. We don't want the... that one. We want this one. So this is an example of one of the things that Earth's character here in Star Trek Online looks like. Let me just paste this in right now. And this is it looks like you at the winter event wearing... What were you wearing in this shot?
Let's see. I'm wearing...
Okay.
Looks like, I believe, just a standard top, a skirt, and some... I mean, if I say any of the names, no one will know what they are. But I've got like a little hat that looks like a Santa hat, and I've got a scarf on. I have the little cat beside me. Like, there's just all sorts of customization you can do.
Yeah, and I tend to keep mine looking more Star Trek-like than absurd. Which is fine. We can do this.
I like to do a mix of both.
And now I'm showing this other one that, you know, the bald-headed woman with the Romulan ears and the lipstick.
Yeah, bald-headed woman. You can do some pretty crazy stuff with the alien. You can also, like, you can be a human, you can be a Bajoran, you can be all sorts of things, but you can also be an alien, and there's just... a ton of customization you can do with that. Do you want to tell the story of the one from your old fleet, Shane?
I do not want to tell that story. but I have seen a Yoda or two running around before.
Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes people just make characters
for the sake of making a character and how they might look. Why don't we talk about your Taylor Swifts and the Andrew character?
If you looked in that other one, you'll see I have an away team of Taylor Swift.
And of course, you can see that this other person here was a playable character because he has his own away team as well. So
yeah, that's Shane. That's his sword wielding character. He was going for the like, what'd you say, group of bandits? Like,
desert bandits?
The desert bandits from Alcari.
There you go. That's what I'm thinking of.
That's a perfect way to
describe it. I can't remember the name. Yeah, like the scimitar wielding.
Yeah. And people. And I mean that's about as close as you can get to that. And you know, the sword is also very effective in game. And you know, it all comes down to customization. We could have made this robe green if we wanted to, or red, but made it white to go with that theme. So, you know, lots of customization. And that is the character that I've probably customized the most in terms of that. And the reason you suggested that I put him in a robe like that was because it was supposed to look like your roommate Andrew, but we couldn't quite get the face right.
So it's like
anything else on customization before we wrap up the Stowe segment of the show?
I don't think so.
All right, well, we've covered a lot about this game, and I mean, this is just a very brief overview of it. And ultimately, you know, if you're interested, feel free to talk to any of us, PM us on the forums, or drop by the Discord if you, or even if you play this game, and we'd be happy to pick it up with you. So, yeah, it's something we enjoy, and that's why we did a bit of a feature here on the podcast with it. So, all right, shall we move on to our question regarding RuneScape Mobile this week?
RuneScape Mobile! Wait, didn't we spend like half an hour talking about this?
Yeah, but we do have a bit of a follow-up here. So
yes, we do. Let's do this.
All right, so this is from Chodo from Clan Quest. He says, "Hey guys, Chodo here. I assume you've already seen the trailer we were presented with earlier this week. It's clear that simple actions like woodcutting or fishing would be quite easy to perform. But what about combat? I think that fighting dangerous bosses like Nek's Angel of Death or Telos would be achievable. But what do you think when it comes to Slayer? What did you kill some abyssal demons via phone or wait until you got home to do it on your computer? And secondly, do you think a mobile version of the game will bring more activity to it, or would we just have the same people around?" So two very good questions there. So how far would we push this with combat? What do you guys think?
I'm sure some people will try to do...
try to do it as a challenge.
Mm-hmm. But anyone who is like genuinely trying to do that would use a computer. I think this is more for the low maintenance skilling.
Yeah, and you know, just as an observation here, I think if you were using the Legacy Combat Mode or if you were using Revolution, you could probably do Slayer. That it doesn't require you to change prayers.
I mean, Slayer, yeah, you could definitely do that, but not bossing.
Yeah, I mean, and I also think you want to have a big screen for bossing as well. And a lot of this is going to depend on how usable and how friendly the interface is. So whether or not we're able to, you know, go to Telos or something like that, we'll just have to wait and see on that. But I don't preclude someone from trying it. But I think Slayer is definitely going to be a probability with this, given how AFKable Slayer is currently. So,
well, it depends on what you're slaying.
Yeah, well, I mean, any modern Slayer creature that's not like a Ripper Demon or something, you'll probably be fine with. So, oh boy, Ripper Demons. And it's going to come down to the interface. And do you think it'll bring more activity, or we'll just have the same people around?
I think it'll bring more activity.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you gain greater awareness, like, oh, I remember this game. What's this one about? Let's try this again. Hey, I got it. Oh, wow. They changed a lot. And, you know, that's what I think would happen.
All right. And, you know, like I said, it's going to be very valuable to Jagex to have a position on the App Store in the game section, and maybe even on the top apps that are there, or even just a featured app when it first comes out. So definitely going to see a good trove of new people coming in for this. That would be my guess.
Most definitely lots of new people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons they're doing this is because they've
tried to expand with Rune Orb, and they had that Transformers game that they tried, which fell in. You know, all that costs a lot of time and money, and I think this is a good route. It's, you remember before, it's like they're trying to expand, but they could never figure out like how, which route to go to. They tried Rune Orb, they tried a lot of the arcade stuff, and none of them worked. I think for this, it's just, you know, stick with your bread and butter, just expand upon it. And I think that's what they're doing, and I think it's it may work out well for them.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, if you guys want to send us in questions for next week's show, update.rsbnb.com/ask, or phone them in, or text them in to 571-572-2632. Better remember that it's 571-57-BNB. All right. On to tech news we go. So,
tech news!
Any LastPass users here?
Hello.
Okay. So LastPass is bringing out a new service for your family. So if you want to have a family subscription for LastPass, you can do that. And basically what this means is that you're going to be able to have a family vault of passwords and have a family manager to be able to manage passwords and licenses upon other people in your family. So if you are a dad, you could ensure that your kids are keeping strong passwords and also ensure that these passwords for them aren't being thrown away by them so that you will always have access to that. And another thing that LastPass has really been promoting recently is that they want you to use their service to store everything from, quote, bank accounts to passports to credit cards. You know, I don't know. Do you feel comfortable putting bank account information, passports?
I never save any of my payment information on any website I go to.
That's a good thing to do.
And I always use a credit card, not a debit card, because credit cards generally have more protections on them than a standard debit card would.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
A lot more insurance.
I mean, the only thing I use LastPass for is usernames and passwords, remembering those.
Yeah. Definitely same.
And you know,
but I can, like, honestly, I would trust them with that because of just the way that they have it set up, but that's just something that I'm not ever comfortable doing. Even though that does not or should not take away from, like, any I have no concerns about the security of LastPass. It's just not something I would ever do.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. And that's the same kind of boat I'm in. And what you're also going to be able to do with this is give access to others in the event of an emergency. And the family member can accomplish this by adding people.
You actually can already do that.
Oh, interesting.
You set it up so that if they don't log in for so many days, then it sends an email to whoever you designate.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So if something happens, then it will let that person take over.
That's good. And they also stress that they want to be flexible as to what you share with family members and how you might want to split this apart. So there's going to be different entitlements set up for different members in the family. They're also calling this a family backup plan so that all this information can be stored safely in the event that, in kind of like, I guess, the way a normal safe would store information if you want to go all in with LastPass. So this is something that's coming to LastPass later this summer, and you'll be able to access if you're a LastPass premium customer. You'll be able to try it for free for 6 months. So...
cool.
Yeah. And I think more people need to be concerned about this because, you know, internet security is everything these days, because if you don't have a secure password for every site that you're on, you're at risk of being compromised. And we all know how much information about us is online these days, right? So
mm-hmm.
LastPass is a good tool.
Okay.
Next up, Windows 10 may actually cut off devices with older CPUs from receiving new hardware updates. So, recently we had the Windows 10 Creator Update come out, and Microsoft has made the decision that if you happen to have an Atom-based Windows device, you're not going to get the Creator Update because, quite frankly, Windows 10 doesn't work well on it. So if it falls outside of the manufacturer support cycle, no future major updates.
I mean, Atom CPUs are like in the laptops that they send to third world countries. They're not great in any sense of the word.
But what is also worth noting is that even though they're not going to get new feature updates, if you do have one of these, you will continue to get security updates through January 2023 when Windows 8.1 service support ends. So
Windows 10, you mean?
No, it says Windows 8.1, January 2023.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah. Which is about which is 10 years after Windows 8 came out, I believe, right? 2013.
Unknown.
But and you know, I think this raises an interesting point going forward, because is Microsoft going to, you know, continue to support an old platform, or are they going to let people run them on slow computers, which will diminish their Windows experience? And I think they're making a great choice here by preventing people from running them, because that will ensure that people are getting a positive Windows experience, and it's not putting a bad word on what Microsoft is creating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think it's about time that they do this, because, I mean, how many times have we gone on some Windows device that is just so painfully slow that it gives Microsoft a bad name? So,
yeah.
I'm glad they're doing this. And, I mean, I don't think anyone with a modern desktop chip has to worry, because they're all probably sufficiently powerful enough going back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not.
Is it still the case that anything can run Windows 7 can run Windows 10?
As far as I can tell, my work, we've been upgrading lots of computers, although this was mostly last summer, and there haven't been any issues where, like, it couldn't run anything, so.
All right, that's good. So, if you have an old Atom chip, just beware of this.
I don't think many of our listeners would have that.
No, I just mainly put it in because, do you guys remember netbooks?
Yeah, like that's all that would be in there.
Yeah.
Oh, like the tiny, tiny half-size.
Yeah, the tiny, tiny half-size things.
Yeah, I call those purse laptops, because you get stick it in their purse and go on out. I hated those.
Yeah.
They have no power.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, they were bad when they were released.
Like, they're only good for is, like, for that college, you know, college girl who can't carry anything, who's like, I just want to do Microsoft Word and look on Facebook.
No,
perfect.
Like, they literally were not even that good.
Alrighty. Facebook also this week has announced that they intend to test a subscription-based news service with a paywall. You will be able to access 10 articles on this service, and then you will be prompted to pay. So the idea behind this is that Facebook is going to be encouraging major publishers to publish on Facebook and receive a cut of the revenue behind this, hence the paywall. And the reason for this is to help out the legacy media companies out there who are already struggling due to falling ad revenue online from people running ad blockers and whatnot. So you guys think it's a good move for Facebook to be headed in this direction?
I mean, I think it was inevitable.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one good thing that they can accomplish with this is that, it will make news when you want to find it. If you so choose to have it tailored to your interests, it'll Facebook knows how to do that, and they'll be able to do that easily. So that's going to help a lot of people find what they want to read, and that'll also help the publisher companies in terms of make money off that. So it's a win-win for both sides in that case. And, you know, I think something like this has been needed for a long time, where if you want to just, you know, read technology news and you don't want to go to, you know, 25 different websites, I think there needs to be something for that. And if Facebook can pull that off, that's pretty good. So
Google News do the same thing.
Yeah.
And you look into your account and start kind of learning what you like. And I mean, I noticed that too when I'm on Google. It's like, I said, it's Overwatch news, but how the hell, you know, I even care about Overwatch?
Yeah, they've been doing that for a while.
That's weird. I don't see any of that, though. I don't have a Google phone, so.
Nor do I. Just on Firefox.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like in Steam browser, if I say I'm playing Fallout New Vegas and I'm looking something up, it will show, like, in the autocomplete, just, like, relevant stuff to the game. Just immediately. I'll even put in two characters and it's already got
the whole thing
name of the weapon I'm looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they want to begin testing this product at the end of the year. It'll be built off of the existing instant articles feature, and they don't have the payment details ironed out. But if the publishers are happy with this, the program could be expanded by 2018 if all goes well. So, and, you know, I think this is something that a lot of people have been talking about as well, is that, you know, we like reading news, but we don't want to go to all these websites to find it. And I think if people are on Facebook, that's probably a good place for them to find it, providing they're aware that's being tailored to their
Yeah, likes. That's going to be the issue, is that they'll look for the things they want, and it may skew their own ideology.
Yeah, but I have mixed feelings about that. So.
But this, I don't give a two rats behind about this, because I don't Facebook, so yeah.
Well, there you go. People who've already signed up include the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Los Angeles Times. So,
as expected.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. All right. Ready to move on to other things?
Other things! Woo!
Okie dokie. So our Skill of the Month update this month is the four-person magic skill of the month. We have Parnassius in first place with 7.8 million experience gained. Second place is X-Blades with 6.9, and third is Flash with just over 2 million XP gain. Looks like we definitely got a race going here for first. Though, as we saw last month, anything can happen. So we just have to.
Or a couple of months in the past where, like, someone from out of nowhere is like, what the?
Yeah, and special emphasis towards last month. So. All right. Achievements of the week. We only got a couple of them this week. First up is Magic King with 99 Herblore on July 19th. Second is Karen Angel on the 14th with 99 Hunter. And also on the 14th, we have Soul Quest with 99 Woodcutting. Congratulations to the three of you. Good job.
Well done. Well done. 99 Herblore and Woodcutting.
And Hunter.
Hunting. All right, Shane, so what's next?
Pick of the week, and you have graciously decided to provide one for us here. So what do you got?
Yeah, so just to go with our Star Trek theme, I thought we'd get you another Star Trek mobile app. So we've been doing that with RS this week too. So this game is called Star Trek Timelines. I've been playing this for a while now. So as you expect, it's all about Star Trek. So it's, let's see, there's some space battles in it. There's a semi-interesting story. So interesting what happened was, remember that episode, Shane, of TNG, where like a million Enterprises start appearing out of nowhere and all the space-time continuum started going cuckoo?
That's right.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. So basically we had a huge, you know, temporal anomaly that threw everything into our universe, and you're in charge of fixing it, or at least making it more stable. So you get your own set of crews, you train them up, you do these missions, you... some of them are considered ground, but there's no real ground people. You really just find out which crew works best in order to complete the mission, and you get some minor space battles. And I've been playing this for a couple of months now, trying to get Shane to come in, but he doesn't want to do it.
But I want a bigger screen first.
iPad.
I guess I could co-op the iPad.
Yeah. And what's nice, it's interesting, Shane, is that you know how this week we released on Star Trek Online, they introduced General Martok and then the whole new mission. Well, this month is actually Klingon month, so they actually have a bunch of new General Martok characters that was released this month.
Oh, very nice. I assume it's free to play.
Yes, it is free to play. You can obviously pay for it, but it's everything here is grindable. So that's something I did. You can actually join a fleet and actually join other people, and they're trying to make it more fleet friendly. In the past, it was very much, even though you were in the fleet, you didn't do anything with them, but now they're starting to, which is quite nice. But Shane, if you ever pop into it, you'll see a lot of iconic characters, which is good for, you know, the Star Trek fan or people who may want to get into it. And there's some, you know, they took some clips from the show, so you actually hear the audio once in a while, and definitely, you know, something you can try on. Very good.
That's cool. All right.
Yeah, it looks like it's available on iOS and Android. What would you say is the best way to get into it? Just start or?
Just start. They have a 5-minute unskippable tutorial on what to do. And then they literally like, all right, here's some randomly generated crew members for you to train up and use and go from there. Very much depending on what you're doing, very easily a 5-minute. I'm going to do a couple of these things and I'm done for now.
Okay, that's good. So it could almost be like player own ports then.
Kind of. You know how the most games they have a point system where like every 5 minutes you get a point and then at the end of the day. Yeah, that's what they did too. But they give you so much, like literally you can play for like an hour and there's still stuff you can do. You can play for like a couple hours and so like you didn't even touch the points at all. Especially when they have the weekend events. Part of my fleet, I've had people like, yeah, I spent like 2 hours on this game and 2 hours straight just trying to get X, Y, Z and whatever it was. So everything in the game is grindable. If you pay, obviously it'll be a little faster, but I'm very much free to play. And yeah, I think, you know, Shane, whenever Shane, you pop in, I think you may enjoy some of it.
All right. Yeah, I'll have to give that a look. I wonder if it'll work on the old 5S.
I don't know. Let's see.
Might be worth trying.
Anyway, here's the website for it. So if you want to take a look at it, the customer support, I had to use them a couple of times because they gave me a bug that completely ruined a lot of things for me. They responded fairly quick. At least they do respond to every ticket that you put in. So it may take some time, but at least customer support, they did it for me. And yeah, so just to give you a little thing, Shane, last time they had an event on here, and I said, I'm going to try to go for the big reward. I saved up all my little points because you can actually get more if you play this game correct, if you want to hog a little bit. But I literally was playing this game for like 3 hours in one thing, just trying to use up all the points.
Very nice.
And yeah, that made my eyes a little hurting, but yeah.
Yeah, I could imagine so after playing on a
Reed, no
game
laughing.
Like
I know what you're thinking.
Oh, I wasn't actually laughing at that, believe it or not.
Oh, what were you laughing at? Oh, actually,
it's
before
just
I
laughing.
Before we do that, I need to send you a picture of one of their Martok ones.
All right, I can throw that in the show notes. So,
I like it because it's ugly as hell.
Okay. Looks like this is available at disruptorbeam.com.
So.
And most Klingons in general.
What happened? Well, he's more ugly in particular. Let me see if I can find it. Not this one. Yeah, even everyone else is like, dude, this is ugly.
All right. Well, I'll let you find that in the meantime. Thank you for the pick of the week, disruptorbeam.com/StarTrekTimelines. So what have we been up to? Let's start with you, Earth. What you been up to? RS-wise or other?
RS, I've been slowly but surely working on the new quests. New in quotes. I'm how many months behind am I, Shane?
Oh, about 8 months behind.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So
that one, Children of Ma.
Yeah.
No. Children of Ma.
And then you got the Sliske's Endgame coming up after that, which I think we still all have mixed feelings about here, but no spoilers since...
Appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that quest.
Oh, you mean the time that I... Oh, oops. Sorry.
Yeah, don't say anything. All right.
Say what?
Anything else you'd like to share?
Not particularly. There's not really much going on.
All right. So... Well, I guess aside from that RS stuff, Star Trek Online, and a bit of Overwatch. How about you, Trekkie?
RS-wise, I haven't been doing much. I've been doing my daily, although I finally got all my manifold and actually do all the way up to Fight Club, which is good.
Oh, good.
So I got to finally do Fight Club, maybe I'll finish those off and... I've been training Invention and Slayer since they're both 120. So I found that if you just augment all your, you know, armor and weapons for Slayer, you can kill three birds with one stone. Just need to siphon them up at the end of the day. But let's see. Way too much Overwatch, but they started a new season for StarCraft to manage. I just did one match earlier and I got back into Diamond in 3v3. Although I will admit I was very much carried.
All right. Well, I mean, as long as you got there, that's what counts.
Okay.
All right. Now, me, I guess, this week on RS, I have been herb farming, doing a couple clue scrolls, and debating whether or not I should go back and try some Slayer. Last time I tried some Slayer, I don't know. I got bored really quickly. So.
But for me, I think the best is to co-op slaying. You get more point, you get more points faster, and it doesn't feel as long for each one. Just
yeah,
gotta
I guess
watch
then you
out
got
for
someone
big,
to talk to, right?
You just have to watch out for the big, angry, you know, giant monster that can kill you in one hit. I hated those.
Yeah.
So annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I've heard stories about
the thing
that.
And the thing is that on double XP, when you're doing it on Slayer with someone else, things go by so fast, so it's really nice. So you have all your gear and food ready to go, and then you log in with someone, you start slaying, and you'll finish like five tasks. Like, wow, it didn't even feel like 2 hours. It can go fairly fast, especially if you decide to potion up and just go as fast as you can.
Alrighty. Well, I believe that's it for this episode then. Anything else before we go?
Live long and prosper.
I got nothing.
Alrighty. Yes. Well,
live long and prosper.
That seems very appropriate given the content of this week's episode.
I agree.
We'll be back next week with a full slate of RS news covering, I believe, Jagex is going to give us the progress update of the projects they're working on the unfinished business side of things. So we'll have a look at that. But until then, thank you for listening and sharing your time with us. And we will see you all next week.
All right.
Kill all the hog goblins.